All right, hour number two begins, as it does every Football Friday, with the knowledge and the depth and the entertainment from Brian Munson from Husker Online. Good Friday morning. I enjoyed our conversation on Saturday via text where we try and figure out what's going to happen. I think we had it narrowed down until the last 2 minutes.
We did. I thought we, I think it exceeded our expectations on the scoring side. I think if we were kind of summarizing, looking back at it, but I think we were both feeling about the same way, that that was going to go Nebraska's way, and there goes that fumble, and there goes that field goal to take it right away from them. It was about as deflating, I think, of a moment in recent history as I can imagine. And I think that the look on Scott's face to kind of finish out the fourth quarter there kind of said it all.
Why do you think, as deflating as it was, and especially to be that close against Michigan, I didn't sense now, after the game or through the course of the week leading up to tomorrow, that this is a team that all of a sudden is depressed, that is down in the dumps.
Right.
It seems kind of even keel. I mean, they don't want to be 3-4. They know they're better than 3-4. They are better than 3-4, but the record is 3-4. Why do you think that's the case, that this is not a team that could easily be down in the dauber and this could just be a ho-hum, oh boy, week? It's kind of like on to the next one.
On to the next one because they know that they're playing better than what their record indicates. Not down the dumps because I think that they know that those kinds of snake bit moments are going to be, you know, the exception and not necessarily the norm, even though I think a lot of folks can point at numerous times, you know, whether it was Illinois before halftime or other various points, I guess, in the last year or more, either with Martinez or that team in general, where they just could not get out of their own way. I think Martinez here, all that stuff that it was kind of piling up, you know, where folks were picking on that being a coaching problem. Frost and blah blah blah. I think that there's a realization that this team is a lot closer than what some people are kind of expecting it to be or think that it is. Like I watched the Big Ten show, you know, right before the game on Saturday, and those guys weren't giving Nebraska much of a shot at all.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously everybody had spoken about or talked about the fact that Michigan had never played from a deficit all season. And Nebraska had a chance to go ahead and put them in a deficit on their first drive. So I really feel like that was kind of there was a positiveness in the display. There was not a positiveness in the result. And I think that there's still a matter of things kind of getting figured out and what it takes to kind of finish things out and win games. That is literally something that I don't think people really kind of truly understand. That there needs to be a fundamental kind of understanding about what you do to kind of finish things out and win games, because they're not all going to be, you know, runaway games like Northwestern. You're going to have to go in there and scrap and fight and claw to kind of beat the Michigans when you're not supposed to have really much of a chance to beat them. And when you get that opportunity, you got to slam the door. And those are against good football teams. And that means not hurting yourself. And that means about, you know, just kind of find the ways to make those good, safe plays, keep things in front of you, and finish it out and win the game.
Nebraska get more credit over the last month for not being blown out, you think? Nationally, locally?
I think that
sounds odd, but, you know, I mean, past history,
yeah,
those kind of games have gone south and they've been ugly. But the Nebraska's a team that's holding their own. They just can't find that next thing.
Yeah. In fact, I think that there's some truth to that. There was actually a poll that I saw on Twitter. I must have been really bored yesterday. There was, I think I'd found the end of Twitter yesterday, and I turned back around when it told me I had found the end of it. But I found a tweet that somebody had been putting up like a power post or a power poll, and actually had Nebraska in the top 25. And I think that there are some people out there that understand that Nebraska is a good football team, but they weren't necessarily out of the gate, or they thought they were much better than what they, you know, than what they kind of showed against Illinois. I think they kind of started putting that together against Oklahoma. I think that's continued, you know, through Michigan State, which was another ball game they should have won. And then, of course, they probably had a very good shot to take down Michigan, which was a top 10 team. So the good news for Nebraska is that there are still some games on that schedule, as the schedule remains for this season, that they can feel very, very good about if they go out there and they play well and they win. You know, Minnesota tomorrow is that team's a little bit like a chameleon. You don't know what you're necessarily getting from week to week. There's some inconsistency there in their performances. But I mean, Wisconsin's a little down this year, but I think Nebraska fans would love to get a win against Paul Christ and Graham Mertz. And I think that obviously playing Ohio State tough, but I think the way that kind of things wrap up, you know, with having Iowa there, I think Nebraska fans could look past a lot of things if they really go out there and perform well and potentially had a chance to beat the Hawkeyes, just like what they did last week against the Wolverines. I think Nebraska fans would be incredibly happy with it.
So waiting is the hardest part, and we become impatient. And when you're into year four, it's understandable. But what if this is, I mean, what if a signature win doesn't come? But the other element that has plagued Nebraska in the last 3 years, losing games to teams that you should not have any business losing to, you fixed that.
Yep.
You took care of Northwestern. You didn't stumble against a Buffalo or a Fordham. Now you have a Minnesota, a Purdue, and a Wisconsin that you could be, and we'll leave out the Wisconsin game, but the next two you're going to be favored in. What if that's a sign of accomplishment? What does that mean?
I think it's exactly what you said. You're winning the ball games that you should. Now if you can do that, where if you looked at the schedule and it was playing out the way that it's supposed to play out from the beginning, and you're winning the games that you should, I mean, you're going to get Illinois back. You potentially get, you know, I don't know, Nebraska wasn't favored against Michigan State and East Lansing, were they?
No.
So you get Illinois back at least, but I think even going back further in the career, you know, of Scott Frost as head coach there in Nebraska, a lot of those one-loss games, there were just an inability to kind of just close it out. And if you can now say, okay, we're not necessarily closing the chapter, but we feel good, we feel better about our performances against playing against teams, of course, not playing down to them, or if we do happen to go out there and stumble out of the game, we don't start quick. And we have a way to kind of, we know that we can turn it on and we can go beat those guys. And I think that's a confidence booster to where you can kind of feel like going out the door that you don't have to prepare for Purdue like you would Michigan, you know, particularly this year. I'm not picking on Purdue necessarily in the past because they've definitely given it to Nebraska a few times. So what I am saying, though, is that the games, of course, that you are supposed to win, Nebraska is winning. And that makes things better, I think, from an appearance perspective by the fans. And it makes things better, of course, for that team to kind of keep building that confidence, of course, and trying to find ways to more zero in on beating the teams, of course, that are maybe a coin flip or maybe the teams that are obviously favored against them that they need to put forth their best effort and cleanest effort.
That's why I think we're all trying to gauge, okay, where the program is, what are signs of progress as a whole, as individuals. I really think the next two games have a lot of intrigue because they lay out in situations that haven't been so good for Nebraska in the past. You know, Nebraska's got a losing record against the combination of Minnesota and Purdue. I think it is 2-4 officially. But you play a game tomorrow going into a bye that you're favored, and you're going to play a game coming out of a bye that you're favored. How you manage this team over the next 3 weeks, I think will also be a sign of where they're going. But now let's focus on the Minnesota game. Minnesota's another team that I'm not sure they know where they're going. They're down to their third, fourth, fifth running back. But you know that P.J. Fleck will find a way to at least muck things up with that position for a little bit before Nebraska adjusts. This is easy to look at and go look at the metrics and go, man, look how Nebraska's playing, what Nebraska's doing well, what Minnesota is not doing well, and say this could be a two-touchdown victory, which I think it could be if things go right for Nebraska, and they're the same team that has played essentially over the next month. How do you see this game playing out against a team that I even think probably P.J. Fleck, he's not really sure what Minnesota Golden Gopher team will show up tomorrow.
Yeah, and you nailed it, right? They've got some personnel problems. They're down a running back or two. I think that they're, you know, obviously their guard also entered into the portal.
Yep.
I think that obviously they're struggling a little bit, but although they put together a good game last week, it is a little bit of a Jekyll and Hyde kind of thing for those guys. They don't they kind of have some similarities to kind of perform the last couple 3 years where you just didn't know who was going to kind of show up on Saturday or how quickly or how successful they were going to be and how quickly or how long they could kind of pull things together, et cetera. So they're kind of going through that similar dance. But I think where Nebraska is at, obviously, I think that defense, like what we talked about, really kind of kept Michigan in check, kept that run game, in check. And I think that's something that obviously come tomorrow, if you can kind of try to keep that team that's going to be down to their third, fourth, fifth running back as one-dimensional as possible, and provided you can come out there and Nebraska can potentially start out cleanly and start out quickly and get some points on the board, and you try to put the Gophers in an early deficit to where they're playing catch-up from the first quarter on, I think that game can kind of get ugly, potentially. I don't see that as the Gopher offense having the ability to put up a lot of points on the Nebraska defense. Mm-hmm. And I saw the over number last night, and I kind of shook my head because I'm kind of 17 points is kind of what I'm feeling there. Mm-hmm. And then at 48.5, you're saying Nebraska gets 31, and I felt like that was a little too high. And so I think Nebraska can win here by two scores. I'm feeling more 10 than 14. But I think the idea here, obviously, is Nebraska comes out and plays cleanly, gets out to a good, clean start, doesn't have early turnover problems or whatever, and the defense kind of stays consistent from where they've been playing. I think Minnesota's going to have a hard time kind of doing a lot of things offensively then tomorrow morning.
Brian Munson from Husker Online joining us. Last two games, night games, very productive. Lots of guys on the sidelines. I mean, I was thinking yesterday, if Nebraska wins their next two and Ohio State wins at Indiana and they beat Penn State, maybe Nebraska gets a third straight nighttime home game against Ohio State. I mean, that could be a possibility, and what, that time of the year, maybe to sneak in some more official visits. But one guy that was not on the list of, hey, official visitor guy, let's celebrate him, became the news of the week. And around here in Omaha, a lot of people that have seen Millard South play, and it's not just Gage Stenger. They've got, other Division I athletes on that roster, and they're a really good team that's well-coached, and they're number one in the state for a reason. Gage Stenger said, I'm going to my dream school, flips from Kansas State to Nebraska. Walk me through the process, Brian, of one, what do you think that phone call was like back to Kansas State to say, hey, I got an offer quietly about 10 days ago. I finally decided I'm going to Nebraska. And then on the end of it, what do you think he offers to Nebraska at his size and the position they want him to play in that defense?
Sure. I'll back it up even a little bit further with you. Say that, going back to the June time frame, like Nebraska let Gage know that they were interested. They were going to keep evaluating it, but they really needed to just see part of his senior year. They needed to kind of see him athletically. They knew where he was at, from a height and weight and athletic, perspective, but they really just kind of wanted to see, how he was going to perform. So now, as you mentioned, Millard South, number one team in the state, Gage, the best player on the number one team in the state, that resonates. So he takes an official visit to Kansas State, he commits to Kansas State, and Nebraska kind of backs off during the whole entire summer. And then, roughly 2 weeks ago, Nebraska's been kind of watching in the shadows, watching the top player, on the best team in the state perform. And he's having a heck of a senior year. So they get a chance to get him back on campus. They get him offered. He gets a chance to go potentially to his dream school, and he's got to make this difficult decision. But once he realizes that's what he wants to do, he's committed to making that phone call. So he has a tough call to make with Kansas State, and they were disappointed. And I think that might be not necessarily the right word I would use for that, but, they really felt like they had seen the potential in him earlier on than what Nebraska did, and that gave them some sort of an advantage. And And I probably would agree with them to some extent, but always something very special about when home state school, dream school are the same, and then all of a sudden that offer comes in. It's typically very, very difficult to meet. Now, Nebraska has mentioned to Gage that, you know, he could potentially be evaluated as a quarterback, but that's not necessarily what he wants to do. He's very committed to the idea of playing linebacker, mainly because of the numbers situation and because he knows that Nebraska's looking for help at linebacker. He knows that he's going to be kind of chosen to play the Dolman, you know, position that's out there now, that's kind of a hybrid linebacker safety, that's really more of a nickel kind of guy. That, you know, we talked about it a little bit where, you know, I said, look, that's an interesting skill set. You could take that and go to playing Sundays if you learn how to really do that, where you're on a running back, on a slot, stopping the run, and then able to also pin your ears back and go get the quarterback. If you nail down like those four things, and you can, and you're really, really good at doing those four things, I said, that's tough to deny as far as like putting together like the body of work and the skill set, and obviously having the height and the size and the speed, of course, you look for in a guy that's playing that position. So I look for him to potentially start, you know, look, try to like go to that Dolman type of position first. And if his body takes off, it's also something that they talked about too, about maybe him sliding into inside. But I think Nebraska got a really good prospect, somebody, of course, that they had their eyes on for a long time. And I think that, obviously, going back to your other question about the Ohio State and the other official visitors, I think Nebraska, with having a bye week here or two, they're going to have a chance to get back out there on the road and reconnect with some guys, and maybe potentially bring in some guys if that happens to be a night game like we suggested.
And now next week, I know, and this may change after the just tragic news of Eric Chenander losing his father this morning. He is scheduled next week to be over at Iowa Western. I know guys will be out on the road. What should we expect here in the next week to 10 days from Nebraska recruiting, utilizing that bye week ahead of two games and then another bye week?
Yeah, they're going to be back out on the road. They got a couple of morning practices, of course, but then they're scheduled for some time off, which I think is good, because they have some bumps and bruises, which I think are going to impact the team a little bit tomorrow from an availability perspective. But I think overall you'll see most of the same names you saw the week before, of course, with the exception of Prohaska. But I think what happens here now is that Nebraska is going to go back out. They've had their eyes on a couple guys, you know, a few guys that they want to go back and take a closer look at through the evaluation process, guys that they don't have offers out to yet, guys that they need to get eyeballs on, need to go talk about their grades. And then they're going to go back also, I think, and try to find some guys that told them no. Back in that May June timeframe when they wanted to bring him in for an official visit. So I think it's going to be really interesting to see where they're popping up at, the positions, of course, that they're poking their heads in to take a look at. I still anticipate, you know, you're probably going to see a defensive tackle, a defensive back. I think, of course, with Gage jumping in here, that linebacker now is really closed out. And I think that, you know, that you're probably going to find themselves also potentially start to talk about maybe going to 15 in the class if the right guys come knocking or are available in the portal, you know, sometime later on, maybe even at the end of the season.
What's the protocol for contacting somebody in the portal in season?
In season? Once they've reached the portal, they're done. There's a situation there, obviously, that they are basically been released, and that's a freedom to contact right there. At least that's the way I understood it. That's why we've seen guys kind of in season, you know, leave one spot and be committed to another spot and then end up being there the very next season. So that should mean that they're capable of getting out, checking other things, determining where they want to be in the next semester or so, and having a chance to kind of go through their recruiting process again.
What do you think will happen? I mean, are we looking at backups are now starters at key spots around the country, and some high-profile quarterbacks are now on the bench, and we immediately think they're going to transfer? How quickly do you think the transfer portal for high-end quarterbacks is going to develop? Are we looking at Black Friday, the first weekend of December? That's when you're going to see a flood of these guys get into the portal, and all craziness will happen with schools that need quarterbacks?
Absolutely. I think that there'll be some, you know, they go through kind of a end-of-the-season exit interview kind of process, and I think some tough questions always get asked, and I think some tough answers are always get delivered. And the best thing is, of course, that honesty, you know, plays the part and allows those guys to potentially get out and go find some spots to go play some ball. And so when you get that high-end transfer, the guys that are sitting behind other players at other big-time universities, guys that are younger, that have bypassed them, you know, like, for an example, a really probably bad example because I don't think it's going to happen, but, like, if Caleb Williams has really, truly displaced Spencer Rattler, and Rattler says, well, I just cost myself a lot of money in the NFL draft, I need to go someplace and kind of get back on, you know, improve my draft stock before I come back out. Mm-hmm. If that was really, truly a scenario there, that would be a guy then I think that would probably then Big 12 championship, you know, determining he doesn't want to be disruptive to the team and what they're trying to accomplish, not look selfish, which of course is a huge part of being a quarterback, and I think where coaches really kind of value. So then you want to make sure that, of course, it's kind of fitting that mold, and you want to then, you know, probably Thanksgiving weekend, first weekend in December, probably right before that first national signing day,
mm-hmm.
and then probably having things kind of wrap up, you know, right around before Christmas time. So you can get over, maybe if it extends over the new year, it's only through like that first weekend or so. That way you can kind of get them on campus there, which would start like, what, the 24th or whatever it is after the first year. So, I think that would be about the right timeline that you're talking about. Black Friday, probably even like the Friday after Thanksgiving or even the second Friday after Thanksgiving.
Great stuff as always, Brian. I appreciate the conversation. I'm sure we'll be texting tomorrow ahead of Nebraska-Minnesota, and I'll look forward to your thoughts next week, and we'll see what happens in the recruiting world concerning Nebraska.
As long as you don't block me, man, I'll send you those texts.
Thanks, Brian.
Later, buddy.
That's Brian Munson from Husker Online. Next segment, the quarterback portal is going to be fascinating. The Nebraska... will they be involved? We're going to get to that in the next segment. But back to something Brian mentioned about Minnesota. So Tanner Morgan only has 11 touchdown passes in the last 12 games. He was blessed with some NFL wide receivers in 2019, and their offense looked really, really good. It has been discombobulated now for 2 years. They don't throw the ball down the field. As a matter of fact, Minnesota, outside of the option-only teams in America, they have the fewest pass attempts. But they do have two healthy wide receivers. They're two top wide receivers, Wright, who is a transfer from Texas A&M, and Autumn Bell, who is well-known in the Big Ten. They are back tomorrow. I just don't know how Minnesota will attack Nebraska and how they want to move the football. But Tanner Morgan is not the Tanner Morgan that we saw a couple of years ago. Now, they will bring in his backup, and they will run some Wildcat. Their backup quarterback ran out of the Wildcat 8 times against Purdue. But I'm having a hard time figuring out how Minnesota is going to move the ball. But I could see them, if they get a lead, of just making this game a muck fest and trying to win. First down and 10 becomes second down and 7. Second down and 7 becomes third down and 4. Third down and 4 becomes first down because we got 4 yards. One of those things. But they're also down their running backs. Their offensive line is veteran, but it's not the mauling offensive line that Fleck has had in a couple of previous years. We'll ask Brian Christopherson how he thinks that Minnesota will attack Nebraska's defense and vice versa. But when we come back, so the quarterback portal for college football is going to be loaded in this offseason. Is Nebraska going to be a player, and what will dictate if they need to be a player or not? We'll discuss when you return. Brian Christopherson as well. He'll join us in this hour of a Football Friday Fiesta on the Gary Sharp Show with Joss on 1620 The Zone. Visit Woodhouse Place Nissan, 144th and Giles, or Woodhouse Nissan in Bellevue for all of your Nissan needs. Now, you can shop their inventory in-store or online, woodhouseplacenissan.com or woodhousenissan.com. You're looking for that perfect car, truck, or SUV? New and pre-owned inventory. You can find it in both locations. You can experience the Woodhouse difference, and you can shop with confidence at Woodhouse today. And at both places, you will find smart and fair prices with features you want in your next car, truck, or SUV, including the 2022 Nissan Frontier. Come view, test drive, purchase. Heated seats, steering wheel, seating up to five, zero gravity seats, available Wi-Fi hotspot, intelligent driver alertness, full-length, fully boxed frame. It is fantastic, and you can check it out now at Woodhouse Place Nissan, 144th and Giles, or Woodhouse in Bellevue, or online, woodhousenissan.com or woodhouseplacenissan.com.